Oilers. We're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Hello everyone, you're listening to Battle Red Radio. I'm Matt Weston, and this evening I'm joined by the big man himself, Tim, and the legendary Rivers McCown. How are you fellas doing tonight?
Here to listen to what Rivers has to say.
Here to listen to what Tim has to say.
I'm here to listen to what y'all have to say, because I'm just here to give y'all a bunch of questions to hear what your thoughts are, because I know what mine are. I think a lot of people listening to the show, you know what my very silly thoughts are. But so for tonight's show, we're going to talk about the past, the present, and the future of the Houston Texans now that we're sitting here at the bye week. And the first thing I want to talk about was this offseason, whenever the Houston Texans traded DeAndre Hopkins for David Johnson in a second-round pick that became a pick swap in a way, and allowed Houston to take Russ Blacklock, and they also traded for Brandon Cooks. So this season, DeAndre Hopkins has 57 catches on 73 targets for 704 yards. He's averaging 12.4 yards of reception, has three touchdowns. David Johnson has 101 carries for 392 yards, 3.9 yards a carry. He also has 16 catches for 161 yards. And Brandon Cooks has 34 catches on 51 targets for 427 yards and is averaging 12.4 yards of reception as well. So, Tim, is the DeAndre Hopkins trade even more of a disaster than you thought it would be when it was made back in March of this year? And then even going back a few weeks after that, whenever the return kind of came through, that was going to be Russ Blacklock and Brandon Cooks.
Yes.
Agree.
Would you like me to expand upon my point?
Yeah, I like that.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. I think everybody at the time knew that it was a terrible idea, that they were giving him away for far less than he was worth. But I'll admit that you could kind of squint and go, especially after the Brandon Cooks trade, you go, maybe Cooks and Fuller and Cobb, even though no one was really that bullish on them signing him, and certainly not to the contract that he got. I think you could squint and go, man, maybe there's some semblance of a plan, even if it was really just a case of trying to drink the Kool-Aid and make things make sense. But I don't think there's any doubt that it's been far worse than anyone envisioned. DeAndre Hopkins continues to be DeAndre Hopkins for a team that is not the Texans. And unfortunately, they don't have anybody that's even in his ballpark in terms of value catching balls for them. And then you look at, you know, paying David Johnson just obscene amounts of money to be a below average running back. It's one of those that I think just kind of, you know, from a 1,000-foot view, you look at it and go, this was a terrible idea. And as you kind of get into the weeds, you look at it a little bit more and go, man, this is even worse than I thought it would be.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's the thing with David Johnson is like, okay, you get a back who, in theory, good pass catching back who runs outside, and then you just run him up the middle on like 70% of his carries. And what are we doing here, folks? What's the point of Texans football?
That's what makes it so bad, is that you've got, I mean, you brought in a running back that you're paying an insane salary to do what Duke Johnson could do for your team if you weren't insistent upon running off tackle, a gap, up the middle, however you want to phrase it, over and over again. I think it might have been one of those situations where Bill O'Brien thought that everyone was going to zig and he was going to zag and show everyone that you could win this way. And it's just, I mean, we can go into a million different reasons as to why it was such a terrible idea, and why the idea of getting rid of as talented a receiver as DeAndre Hopkins is just at its crux a horrible idea. But to then decide that they're going to double down and bring in a running back in an age where no smart team overpays for a running back. I mean, as I understand it, the Cardinals essentially were resigned to the fact, or at least their fan base was resigned to the fact, that if they weren't going to cut David Johnson and get nothing for him, they were going to have to staple a second round pick to him, Brock Osweiler style, to get someone to take him. And Bill O'Brien goes and essentially trades for him and gives up arguably the best receiver in the game to do it. I mean, it's even now, months later, it was insane when it happened. And now looking at it, it's even more insane. You don't give up a guy like that at all, but you certainly don't give him up to get worse, markedly worse, which is what they did.
Yeah, and it's funny too, because you know David Johnson was the Cardinals' third best running back last year. And then it's become even more apparent as like Kenyon Drake's been, you know, kind of bad, but the run blocking's been bad there. And Chase Edmonds is far and away better than David Johnson. And so we joked about like when the trade was made this spring, like at least get Chase Edmonds if you're going to trade DeAndre Hopkins to Arizona. And, you know, Johnson start off the year, like he had that one really great run against Kansas City. And, you know, it's hard to tell if it was the run blocking was the problem or if it was Johnson, but he's been in so many tackle breaking chances where he just isn't doing it all anymore. And that run he had against Green Bay where he spins into a tackle attempt and turns his back to him. After that happened, like, yeah, just release him. We need a Simpson Glue Factory or make hot dogs out of him because there's nothing else at all he can really do anymore.
Let me ask you guys this. Like, is there a running back just anywhere in the NFL that you would have traded DeAndre Hopkins for straight up?
No.
Weston?
Yeah, I couldn't name one. You'd have to get like a back and a pick back, and even then I wouldn't do it.
I agree. But I'm just saying straight up, and Bill O'Brien traded him for David Johnson and a second round pick. Again, which was the package that, as I understand it, Cardinals fans thought they were going to have to send to a team for something far less than DeAndre Hopkins just to get him off their books. And Bill O'Brien sent them DeAndre freaking Hopkins. I'm getting angry just talking about it.
The only joy that I have taken from anything in this season was after they fired Bill O'Brien and they brought in Cal for that like 13-minute four-question interview, and he did the whole, well, we couldn't afford to pay Hopkins thing again, and then DeAndre took that sports radio 610 tweet, I think it was, and it was just like, okay, Kyle, let me tell you, as my agent, I can tell you that I would have taken a Band-Aid, and just calling him Kyle McNair is the only joy I've had this entire season.
How about right after the trade was made, when Cal McNair went on that conference call with O'Brien and Easterby and said that if he was a fan, he'd be excited that his team was making bold moves?
Yeah, I remember that one. We took all the clips and made a show of that where we took, you know, O'Brien and McNair's and Easterby's clips and talked about them. And it was pretty hilarious. And the thing is, like, O'Brien said this trade was made for football reasons, and it obviously wasn't. So Rivers, without Hopkins around, what do you think has been the biggest thing they missed without him? Has it been the vertical passing? Has it been consistent first down receptions? Has it been the plays that Watson makes, you know, outside the structure of the offense, or him and Hopkins have that relationship? Is it, you know, drawing double teams to open up for others? How has Houston, why, like, what aspect of Hopkins's game has affected Houston the most without him here?
I guess if you want to like really dig it down into one thing, I think it really hurts their red zone passing a lot. You pointed this out, the Fuller back shoulder catch that he did not complete in the Vikings game. DeAndre Hopkins catches that ball.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime they get close in with how they're set up right now, they have real problems winning one-on-one because they don't have that guy anymore. Will Fuller is pretty good at one-on-one. He's not DeAndre Hopkins. And every time we get, you know, even close to the red zone, I'm just like dreading the inevitable David Johnson carries that go nowhere in combination with the receivers who can't get open one-on-one.
Yeah, I think Johnson's probably the worst red zone back I've ever seen. What about you, Tim? What do you think Houston's missing the most about Hopkins here?
I think they're missing DeAndre Hopkins.
Just everything
about, you know, I mean, I think when we watched him, we knew how great he was. And it's one of those things that when he's not pulling your ass out of the fire time and time again, especially on third downs, maybe you kind of notice it more. But there's so much about him that was, whether it was the red zone, whether it's just first down or third down, you know, catches on third down to convert first down. I mean, the guy was so good at literally everything, whether it was going across the field, whether it was going down the sideline, he was everything. And now they don't have that guy. And that's not to say that Brandon Cooks and Will Fuller and Randall Cobb aren't talented players. I think they are. but none of them is anywhere in the same class as DeAndre Hopkins. And to not have that guy over and over again after you saw what he did, especially what he was able to do with, I mean, the guy was a legitimately great receiver with Brock Osweiler, mm-hmm. Ryan Mallett, Brian Hoyer, AJ McCarron, Jake Delhomme, Shane Boyd, BJ Daniels. There
he caught that pass from Brandon Weeding. It's Tennessee too. That one time,
Brandon Weeden. That's there. You go. There literally was nobody. He dealt with at best mediocre quarterback play essentially his entire career. He gets Deshaun Watson. He was always fantastic. He gets Deshaun Watson, and they decided, and by they I mean Bill O'Brien and I assume Jack Easterby, decided that somehow this team was better, both in the short and long term, without having DeAndre Hopkins lining up at wide receiver. I mean, just again, this is going to be a long podcast.
Yeah, just that's hearing out loud makes it even like hearing somebody else say out loud instead of just in my own head just really kind of makes it really, I really am able to understand just how absurd it is. For me, I think it's just creating easy offense. Like Houston's had trouble, you know, creating easy throws and easy runs this year. On third down, they're at 39.8%, which is 21st. Hopkins right now is first in the league in first downs with 36 with receiving. Fuller and Cooks have 22 each, which is tied 20th, which isn't bad. But again, like they lose that guy who always is able to consistently move the chains on third down. And you know, there was the idea last year that Hopkins was starting to slow down because he didn't have the same like downfield passing numbers. And it was really just because Bill O'Brien put him in the slot on like third and one or even like third and four or whatever, and just have them like run quick passes center of field to move the chains. And that was kind of like their easy source of offense throughout last year. So Rivers, as far as David Johnson goes, the last question I have about him is who is the worst running back you can think of this year that's still better than David Johnson?
The worst running back I can think of this year that's still better than David Johnson is Jordan Howard. I would rather start Jordan Howard. I think he could run inside and get 4 yards sometimes.
Yeah.
And that's a big benefit for a team. As we learned last year, Carlos Hyde here. And I pulled up some stats because I was curious. And the Texans haven't had a positive rush DVOA since week one. So, Matt, I know you've got like a long outline here, but maybe we can get to the things that are like positive instead of depressing.
Yeah. I just want to get through. I want to get through the Hopkins stuff real fast. Cause I was thinking about this earlier today. And for me, I think it has to be Frank Gore. Like the Texans offense would be like, I don't know, like maybe 2% better if it's Frank Gore getting all those carries instead of Houston. Let's go some positive stuff. We'll talk about Deshaun Watson. So he's third in DYAR, fourth in DVOA. And even the slow offensive start the first 4 weeks with Bill O'Brien charged, he's still been playing, you know, like a top five quarterback, I guess, you know, efficiency and value wise. Rivers, do you think there's some sort of disconnect with the numbers here, or do you think Watson has played like a top five quarterback this season?
I think he's played up to that number. Yeah, I don't know that I would say that he's like it underrates him or anything, but they've played a lot of tough defenses, even the ones that they have played that aren't really like good. Outside of Jacksonville, have at least some scrappy moments, have some decent schemes, and can catch somebody every third down or so. I think Deshaun Watson's only real issues have been, you know, when it comes down to kind of the constricting of the field when you get to the red zone. It's been difficult for the Texans. It really has, just because, again. Some receiver got traded.
What about you, Tim? Do you think Watson's played like a top five quarterback this year?
I think he's been pretty good these last couple games. You know, top five, I guess the best way to put it would be no. I don't think he's been a top five quarterback this year in terms of what he's done on the field, but I don't necessarily think that's his fault. I think his hands were kind of tied, certainly the first 4 weeks, by what he was dealing with in terms of an offensive scheme and play calling and all those sorts of things. I still think the guy's a top quarterback, a top five quarterback in the league. I just don't think that necessarily what we've seen this year through the first 7 weeks has bared that out. you know, there's, I mean, in terms of going forward, I mean, how many quarterbacks would you rather have under center for your favorite team than Deshaun Watson going forward for, let's say, the next 5 years? I think it's a really, really, really short list. So, I, you know, whether he's been a top five guy this year or not, I would probably lean towards no, but I don't think necessarily all of that is his fault or by design. There's really not very many guys I would rather have going forward than him. And hopefully when we get a new guy in here, somebody who understands that trading DeAndre Hopkins for a bag of magic beans and some dirt isn't a good idea. You know, I'm optimistic that things can get better in a hurry, despite the fact that we're obviously strapped with cap room and assets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you guys remember the end of the second quarter against Pittsburgh when Deshaun Watson drove the entire length of the field in 45 seconds? It took like five passes, and then the collective staff was just like, let's look at that and then ignore it.
Let's make sure we run the ball right when the third quarter starts.
I really thought that like you watch that, we're obviously biased. We're watching it at home. We're invested in the team. It's not our job. But like, I don't understand how anyone could watch that and decide that the best course of action moving forward in the second half of that game is to essentially sit on the ball. And that's more or less what they did until they had to do something differently. I mean, the more I talk about it, I usually, you know, kind of just choke these thoughts down. And now actually talking about it, I just get angrier and angrier.
Yeah, I will say like the one thing about Watson this year, and I think he's a better quarterback this year than he was last year. I think a lot of it just has to come with the offense, you know, instead of they moved far away from that drag flat RPO stuff since O'Brien's been gone. And like whenever they get into these shotgun and empty formation sets where you have five receivers and you're playing out shotgun with four wide receivers, like Watson's been really spectacular when the field's been spread out. And so like it's really given me kind of like hope for whoever the next coach is next year, even though regardless of like the cap space issues and the pick issues, just the fact like with how good Watson's been these spread sets, you know, that Houston could have a really good offense again next year, even regardless of like the difficulties that's going to be, you know, this offseason too. What about you, Rivers? Like, what have you seen the difference between Tim Kelly and O'Brien? And you think just by like going spread and empty has been a big reason for his improvement this season?
I think since Tim Kelly took over, he's been a lot better at moving guys around. I think the offense got really stagnant under O'Brien's lead. And I think particularly Brandon Cooks has really benefited from moving around formations, getting some slot targets. I feel like in general, the O'Brien offense really like sucked all of the good targets, all the desirable looks into the slot.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with Kelly kind of taking over, I think you've seen those more spread around, and I think you've seen the players line up in better spots for them.
Yeah, that makes sense. It kind of makes me think that like first throw, like even just like taking advantage of matchups, you know, like when they play Jacksonville and having Chris Claybrooks across from Brandon Cooks and hitting him on a fade route, just like little simple things like that. Or whenever you spread the field out more, you can pick and pop and pick your matchups a lot better whenever you spread the field out like that as well too. Tim, we had a question here from @ConfusedLefty, and he asks, given Deshaun is struggling here, this team right now, despite having some decent receivers with Cooks and Fuller, has he regressed as a quarterback this year? Just pick him on Cooks' press conference where he seemed to suggest the offense wasn't training hard. And so this was a listener, I guess, who had this idea that maybe Watson has regressed. Have you seen that at all? And if he has regressed, not maybe overall, are there any aspects of his game where he's maybe dropping off this year?
You know, I think that part of the reason that people can fairly say that they think he's regressed, I don't think that's an unfair position to take just based on what you've watched, is that we got so spoiled for those six games during his rookie season where he looked like he was just on a different level than anyone in the entire league. And everything since then has sort of been a poor imitation of how explosive the offense was for those six games. If we don't have that six game sample size where we thought we had the absolute next big thing before Patrick Mahomes, before anybody, I think without that, we're probably not talking about regression. We're talking about what a special young quarterback he is and how he's, you know, everything's, there's a bump in the road, but he's still a really, really good player, and we're optimistic about what he's going to become. Those six games, I think, sort of unfairly skewed what we think he should be at this stage. And then that's before we get to the fact that I don't think there's any reasonable argument that he hasn't been hamstrung by the offense, by the play calling, all those sorts of things over the past couple of years. So I guess to answer the question, I don't think he's regressed. I think we're unfairly measuring him on some level based on that small sample size. I think he's a great player. I think he's going to be an even greater player. We just all look at that six games in 2017 and go, "That why isn't he that every week?" And, you know, I mean, the reason he's not that every week is because Bill O'Brien and Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, the only thing I've kind of seen as far as like him aggressing any individual aspects of his game is, you know, throwing the ball downfield. He's thrown six touchdowns to five interceptions this year. He's also, and that's probably more because of the offensive scheme, not having Hopkins, that creates those easier one versus one matchups where, you know, you get two guys on Hopkins and then you have Fuller running an easy, you know, dig or post underneath it or above that. And also, like, on some short throws, he's missed guys behind. He hasn't made the same, like, insane scrambles on the run like he made last year as well, too. And part of that's just not having Hopkins. But, like, I think you really said well, Tim. Like, these are really nitpicky things. These are things you're trying to compare him to being, like, you know, 34 points a game, whatever it was in 2017. Not necessarily Hopkins and his skill set. Defensively, like, right now this year, the Texans did bet on J.J. Watt to be Watt this year and carry them to at least, like, an average passing defense this season. Houston is 24th in pass DVOA and 27th in pass pass defense DVOA. And they got actively worse this offseason by releasing Tayshaun Gibson, not signing DJ Reader, and only adding Eric Murray to the pass defense this year. Rivers, is this almost as absurd as the decision to trade DeAndre Hopkins to make these defensive changes that they made and expect to maybe even be passable this year?
No, it is not. It is not as absurd as trading DeAndre Hopkins. That's all I've got.
Nothing is more absurd than that. Nothing.
What about whenever you see Eric Murray playing slot press man against Davante Adams, you know? Does that change your mind at all whenever you close your eyes and see that?
When I close my eyes at night, the only thing that I will remember from this season is the tweet with Kyle McNair in it. That's all. That's the only thing that I will ever think about. I know that we have to cover it. I know that I have posted like 20 clips of Vernon Hargreaves getting his ass torched. Big ups, Vernon, for taking your lumps. It's not easy. It's really not a spot that you should be in. I don't harbor any ill will towards any of the Texans defenders, but this unit is terrible right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and going off that, Tim, you know, with Anthony Weaver as defensive coordinator this year, do you think like the big problem with this defense is just the talent here? And what do you make of the job he's done so far?
You know, earlier in the year, I very much was of the mind that you couldn't really blame him for what was going on because there was just no talent. And I think on some level, I still feel the same way. But I don't know that I necessarily have the same sort of blank check idea that I did, you know, in the first 3-4 weeks of the season in terms of it being a talent issue. Now, there's no doubt. The Texans' defensive talent is horrific. And I don't think that anyone could really succeed with it. If anything, it should really make us appreciate the job Romeo Crennel did for the last few years, because there was certainly more talent on that defense before this year. But I think scheme-wise, he probably could have covered up some of the holes a little bit better than Anthony Weaver did, just from the fact that he's been successful with so many, I think, mediocre, talented defenses before this year. So I guess to answer your question, I certainly felt like we couldn't really judge Anthony Weaver through the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season, but there's been enough stuff that we've seen over the last couple weeks that I go, man, I don't know that it's just all a talent issue. I don't think that he ever could have succeeded with the lack of talent that Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby gave him on this defense, but I don't think that necessarily should completely acquit him of any responsibility for what we see week in and week out, where if the defense holds the opposition under 30 points, I think we're all genuinely surprised. I don't think any NFL defense, that's a good place to be for the coordinator, no matter how bad the talent is.
What about you, Rivers?
All I'll say is that I think Anthony Weaver should spend the bye week taking Zach Cunningham into the lab and, you know, fixing that radar, because the one consistent thing that's happened in every game, it's not just the lack of talent. It's also that the guys that have the talent aren't playing very well.
Mm-hmm.
And like Cunningham, I know that people are upset about, you know, him getting dogged on Twitter. I get that he's been really good, but this year he has not been good. I mean, he's a big reason that the run defense has been so hit or miss. And like, I don't know if it's a coaching issue between him and Weaver. I don't know if, you know, the inside linebackers coach or something is like in his ear telling him things that he shouldn't do. But what we had last year was a guy who could, you know, fit these gaps and hit them quick. And that guy has disappeared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder how much of it with him, too. It's like, I kind of talked about how, like, I think McKinney's better than him just because McKinney had a much tougher job in this defense where he's playing, you know, strong side. He's dealing with double teams. He's dealing with guards. Whereas Cunningham just got to play backside and outrun offensive linemen, deliver kill shots on running backs over and over again. I wonder how much of that for him is just having this additional responsibility and no longer just having like a really easy job in an NFL defense, you know, compared to some other players on his team. And then whenever you have Brand Dunn getting driven back, you know, 3 yards off the ball every play, and PJ Hall being good like 1 out of every 10 plays, and Carlos Watkins and Blacklock not providing anything, if it's just, you know, the job has just gotten tougher and he just doesn't have the talent to be able to get to another level to be able to overcome it. And that's what I've seen a lot from Cunningham this year, aside from like all the high missed tackles and open field as well.
I think that's the biggest thing is, and I'm as guilty of this as anybody. I knew that losing DJ Reader would be a loss. I knew that would be a problem, but I'll be the first to admit, I think I totally underestimated how big of a loss it would be in terms of the effect that it's had on the rest of the defense, because Zach Cunningham has not been the guy that we thought he would be. And I think part of that's a loss of Reader. Part of it's not having McKinney next to him. The other guy who I've been really, you know, disappointed with, because I thought he was truly, truly a stud before this year, is Justin Reed. Mm-hmm. I think Reed and Cunningham were two dudes that coming into the season, you thought you were set. Both those guys were at the very top of the league at their position, and neither of them thus far has played like that. That doesn't mean that they won't get there again. That doesn't mean that it's not just a bump in the road. But for right now, I think both those guys have really, really underwhelmed. And I think at least when you look at Cunningham, you can say, well, not having McKinney next to him might have an effect on him. I don't know what you would say about Reed in that regard, unless we're just going to say the secondary got that much worse, and it did. But I don't know that it really matters. I don't know if that necessarily explains the drop-off that we've seen in his play.
See, I think Reed actually has covered fairly well this year. I think when he's one-on-one, he does a pretty good job. But, like, the way they want to do things with being multiple, whatever that means to Anthony Weaver, just doesn't – it seems to get him in bad positions. And we had the shoulder issue last year, right? That was it. It was like a shoulder thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then this year we've got, you know, he's been wearing a brace on his wrists at times. He's been on the injury report again. It's one of those things where, like, maybe this is just a banged up guy you've got, and sometimes he's going to give you all he's got, and sometimes it's not as good as it is when he's healthy.
The tackling has been, you know, again, who are we to throw stones at these guys for not tackling well, right? I mean, they're all at the top of their profession, and you know, could probably beat at least me in a street fight, maybe not Rivers, but the rest of us, the rest of us, they could absolutely beat up, you know. But I mean, Justin Reed, and maybe so much of it is just sort of the camera angles and how the season has gone, but it seems like this year there's been so much leading with the shoulder, not even trying to wrap up people, and either just whiffing or bouncing off of them. The tackling more so than the coverage. I won't take exception with anything Rivers said about the coverage, but in terms of the actual tackling, I think it's been really, really bad compared to what we expected from Justin Reed, and frankly, what we got spoiled by the first couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
I got one more thing to say, and that is, Matt, I don't think that when McKinney was healthy, Cunningham was playing well either.
No, I don't think he has either, but I think just like I just think he's had a much tougher role. But yeah, like he was bad the first 3 weeks of the season when McKinney was out there, and McKinney was, you know, didn't look like McKinney this year as well either, just having to deal.
Yeah, McKinney wasn't good either. That's mm-hmm. absolutely right. That's absolutely right. Neither one of them was good, but I think that since McKinney went out, Cunningham has looked even worse. And that's not to say that he was lighting things on fire when McKinney was there. But I think since McKinney is gone, I think that Cunningham's looked markedly worse.
Yeah, and like McKinney, I pulled some clips. I didn't get a chance to write about it, but like I think it was like week three against Baltimore. Like he made like every run stop he made was just so exhaustive. Like he was leaping over offensive guards to grapple guys, and he was just having to go through a whole lot. And just everything's been just really a lot tougher for those two guys this year compared to previous seasons. And I think I have the same opinion as you do, Tim, with Weaver. Like I think the first few weeks he did a very good job. But then, like, there's been enough, like, just, like, really kind of silly things that he's done lately, like rushing Jacob Martin in the interior, not bracketing Devontae Adams once, playing Lonnie Johnson Jr. deep middle while Vern Hargreaves can't, you know, cover anybody at all, blitzing without getting any results at all out of it. Last week against Green Bay, he had Brent Scarlett playing hand-down defensive end. Brandon Dunn was the flat defender in that dump-off pass to Derrick Henry that went for 52 yards. You know, like, the talent's the issue here, but there's just so many, like, just kind of insane decisions that he makes where I think he's just trying to be exotic for the sake of being exotic, kind of like that Rex Ryan syndrome where, you know, you have to make everything really complicated and as difficult as possible whenever, you know, you don't really need to. And there's just so many basic kind of like elementary decisions that, you know, should be made that he doesn't make too often. And so I've really kind of soured on Weaver the last 4 weeks of the season.
Well, see, and I wonder, I mean, there's no doubt Anthony Weaver is getting fired at the end of this year. Regardless of who comes in, he's not keeping his job. But what I wonder is how much of this is I have zero talent available to me on much of the defense, so I've got to try to do something different. I've got to try to do something to shake things up. Because, I mean, you know, you at the end of the day, you still have Vernon Hargreaves, Lonnie Johnson Jr., Brandon Dunn, Brendan Scarlett. All those guys on a good defense, if they're not getting no snaps, they're getting like rotational snaps. But on the Texans right now, they're getting the majority of the snaps. So I wonder how much of it is just Anthony Weaver saying, I am facing a significant deficiency at talent. So I got to try to be cute. I got to try to do something different. And then we're left with, you know, again, at the end of the day, Vernon Hargreaves is still somehow playing, what, 90% of the snaps at corner? And I mean, how can you really put lipstick on that?
My two best corners are Vernon Hargreaves and Philip Gaines. How many games will I win this year?
Yeah, I mean, it's just Bradley Roby, I think, has been good. I don't think he's been great, but I think he's been good. But after him, man, like the rest of these guys that are playing with the exception of Justin Reed, who, again, I don't think has been any great shakes this year. The rest of the guys that are starting or getting snaps in that secondary, they don't have any business getting the lion's share of plays for even a mediocre defense. And yet those are the guys that the Texans are relying on. So I wonder how much of it is Weaver just trying to say, I got to do something different to mask the deficiency that I have talent-wise.
Mm-hmm. And also, let's throw in, what's his name, Gerrion Conley. Matt, what do you think about Gerrion Conley missing snaps and how big of a deal that is and how very, very important it is to everybody on Twitter who I hear every week telling me just that if we had Gerrion Conley, life would be so much better.
See, I'm not that big of a Conley fan just because last year, I think a lot of his past defenses were kind of like fool's gold where he just kind of his back is turned, he's kind of jumping up and like he got away with stuff and he failed to stay on top of the routes and he was just playing like cover four and everything breaking inside, he wasn't able to cover it all. But yeah, the difference between him and Vernon Hargreaves is traumatic. The one thing I don't really understand though is like, does Houston have a training staff at all? Like, couldn't they have told, you know, general manager Bill O'Brien, like, hey, this ankle is really bad and you got 5 weeks until the season goes and you really should just try to find like somebody, anybody else who can step in here at all. Because the whole situation has just been, you know, really dumb in hindsight now that we're seeing Philip Gaines and Vernon Hargreaves out here all the time.
Well, here's the thing. They thought they had the guy when they re-signed Philip Gaines. That's the problem.
And Philip Gaines coming off injury as well, too. So for the present, the Texans are 1-6. I could read their postseason odds, but there's no reason to do that. I really think the only thing they can do from a win-loss perspective is beat the Colts twice and try to keep the Colts from making the playoffs because they're the only bad franchise in the NFL. But Tim, what are some moves that you'd like to see Houston make right now to try to get the most out of the 2020 season, just from like a developmental perspective?
I think that's the thing that's so frustrating about what we're watching every week is usually, and I mean, we know this probably, I think, better than a lot of fan bases, is usually when your team is circling the bowl, you at least have the hope of, well, they're going to get a high pick in the draft and we're going to be able to at least maybe get this guy or get that guy. I mean, we don't even have that. I mean, it's just in that regard, it's totally hopeless. So, you know, what can they do developmentally? I mean, I think you got to get Max Sharping back out there. And even if he's just a horror show, you still need to find out what you have with him, especially after last game when I don't think Kelamedi was good at all. I'd rather have Max Sharping out there and at least find out whether guard is something we need to make more of a priority than maybe we thought it was last year. You know, in the secondary, absolutely let Lonnie Johnson play. You know, you burned a second round pick on him. I think at the time, most people that watched kind of raised an eyebrow and said, I don't know. And he's certainly given you nothing over the last couple years to where you would feel really good about him going forward at safety or corner. Offensively, you know, the real question to me, not even just offensively, I guess, the real question to me is what are you willing to do at the trade deadline to try to maximize your assets going forward? I think it's amazing that they were able to get anything for Eli Ankoo, who, you know, Weston, you wrote, never actually played a snap for the Texans. Somehow they were able to turn that into a seventh round pick. It's sort of the new Drew Henson deal in terms of being able to get something for him without him ever playing. But, you know, go trade what you can for reasonable value. Of course, the other side of that is, do you trust the guys that are making that decision to get anything approximating reasonable value? So, I mean, Rivers, both you guys, I'd be interested to hear what you think in terms of development, what you can do beyond maybe Max Sharping, because I think Max Sharping, Lonnie Johnson, you want to get Ross Blacklock, you want to get Jonathan Greenard in there, you want to get John Reed in there, you want to get these young guys in there just to sort of take reps to see what you have going forward. But developmentally, you've got a bunch of veterans who are making a ton of money that, frankly, especially in the case of a guy like Whitney Mercilus, a guy like Eric Murray, I don't know that there's another team that would have signed them for anything close to what they got. And I like Randall Cobb, but again, especially with the wide receiver market the way it went, I don't know that there's another team that would have paid any of those guys what they got from Houston. So, you know, at this point, you made a mistake, I think, sort of across the board in a lot of things. Play the young guys, see what happens, and then move forward and hopefully make it a more attractive job for whoever's coming forward.
Tim, I think you've got to looking into giving Xavier DB some snaps. I think he's finally earned it.
You know, it's funny you say that. Well, you know that. That's why you poked. I have a Xavier DB autographed football at my house because I remember back what year was that? 2007?
Yeah.
Maybe? Okay. All right. I remember being so excited when they drafted him out of Virginia Tech. And I said, and I may well have written, that he reminded me of D'Amico Ryans. And, you know, just, again, kind of, you know, exhibit 1,464 about how I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. But it's amazing to me to look at guys like that, like, go get them the reps and see what happens. And if you need to cut bait and eject early, do it. It doesn't do you any good to wonder what you've got, because guys like that, man, again, coming back to Lonnie Johnson, who may well be the new Xavier Adibi. If he's not there, if it's not a guy that you feel good about, find out now and be able to cut bait.
I think Brandon Harris has more of a Lonnie Johnson vibe to me personally.
Again, we've talked about this. When they traded up to get Brandon Harris, I jumped out of my chair and did a fist pump. I was so excited that they got Brandon Harris. I'm in no position to evaluate talent at all in any way, shape, or form. But Xavier Adibi, Brandon Harris, I was excited about both of them, not excited about Lonnie Johnson. And they're probably, I think it's fair to say, maybe all three are sort of in the same boat at this point.
I think you started it off by saying the frustrating thing is that we have no first round pick and no second round pick. And then, you know, there's no like tanking your way into this. But the frustrating thing to me is that you have a lot of youth on this roster already that you just don't use. Mm-hmm. You don't give it a chance. You don't care about it. John Greenard can't get on the field because he got hurt in training camp, and This is something that every Texans position coach has to talk about five times every time he's mentioned. He was so far behind. Oh, and it's not a rookie year. John Reed got 30 snaps in the first game, and I think I was listening to something Texans related from the mothership Thursday or Wednesday or Thursday. And even like their own hosts are just like, why did this guy get 30 snaps and then disappear into the, you know, crevices of the depth chart behind Philip Gaines? Nobody can answer these questions. And that's the most frustrating thing to me, is just that you have young guys. The season is fairly lost at this point. I know that, you know, we put on a good show with Romeo as far as, well, I want these guys to play well. I want, yeah, I do too. I also want to see what's happening in 2021, and maybe we should think about that since this team is 1-6.
Yeah, yeah.
And John Reed was the one guy coming out of camp that there were so many positive articles and positive talk about how he really sort of stood out amongst all the rookies. Nobody said that about Blacklock. Nobody said that about Greenard, at least not publicly. And yet he went from, all right, was kind of making his way to now he's being frozen out. Again, we come back to the idea there's maybe it's not fair to say there was no rhyme or reason. You can squint and say, I see what they were trying to do, but it all clearly was so, so poorly planned that here we are talking in week 8. They're 1-6 and there is zero hope for this season. Zero.
Yeah, and we don't know anything about these players at all either. Like, I saw Greenard attack a fullback on a pool, and that was it. That's the only time I saw him. I think Reed starred that Kansas City game because Lion Johnson posted that tweet that was like, we don't talk online, we talk on the field. While he was talking online ahead of that Kansas City game, I think he got benched that first half, and so that's obviously all Reed.
He was not tough, smart, or dependable at that point.
Not at all. But I want to see Jacob Martin play in the exterior. Like, I'm not a big Jacob Martin fan, but like, at least he's like, I think he's very overblown, but at least like, he doesn't have an answer when guys get their hands on him. He doesn't have an inside move. He just has that chop rip, and it's beautiful when it all comes together. But more often than not, like, guys get their hands on him, he can't do anything. But just stop rushing him on the interior. It's a waste of time just because you may drop him back in coverage, you know, 4 out of those 5 times he's lined up on the interior. I want to see Omoniehu only on passing downs. I want to see Johnson Jr. outside when they play like cover 3 and cover 4. Never run the football again. I think I would also want to see David Johnson probably get released like Rivers wrote about recently, and just like scan the depth chart for, you know, somebody in a practice squad you can bring in there. Max Sharping should play over Kelemente too. And if he doesn't play, just lock him in the weight room, put him on IR for the rest of the year and see if you can get him up to like 325 for next season. But it's a lot of just like trying to wait and see what you can have for eventually next year. But the big thing though is a question from Matt Smith Grandma, and he asked, when will the chisel Greek god Kahale Waring rise from the embers of destruction, become the savior of this decimated franchise? And I think Kahale Waring couldn't pay attention in all the meetings and everything because he was so busy fantasizing about playing water polo, and that's why he hasn't been able to come on the field at all. But yeah, I want to see Kahale play as well too. Just anything in these young guys out here, from everybody from Kahale to Sharping to, you know, whoever else is below the age of 26.
Name someone on a practice squad that you wouldn't take starting over David Johnson right now. Challenge.
I thought about doing this because Chris mentioned this on last week's show. I didn't have enough time to do it, but I saw Deontay Foreman today, and he's better than David Johnson is.
And he's not making $11 million.
Not as smart.
Probably and he went to Texas, smart. And he went to Texas, which automatically means he's a good person and someone you can get behind.
Yeah, it's a good point.
I appreciate both of you for not snickering at that. That was very, very respectful.
I was snickering on mute, if it makes you feel any better.
Okay, that's fair. At least you didn't publicize it.
I think BFD Stain has completely ruined that entire university just because of the fact that he's associated with it. So the trade deadline's coming up on November 3rd. And earlier this week, Albert Breer reported that Watson, Watt, Tunsil, and Howard were the untouchable players for the Houston Texans. So his next question is from @PhilJohnsonY, and he asked, how big is the fire sale, and how do you feel about Easterby and his coalition doing the selling? And this question is for you, Rivers.
In my mind, there's no fire sale. I don't think that Jack Easterby has the huevos to actually make any kind of trade that matters. And I think the way that he wants to paint himself coming out of this is tied very heavily into the trade deadline. You don't want to step on any eggshells after everything's already hit the floor, right? So you just kind of back away. Just back away. I'm still VP. I'll still get my job. I'll still get to say that everybody else sucks when they're hired, and then I'll just keep getting paid. And I think that's, I mean, I've seen a lot of the rumors. I get it, but the things that I'm hearing and, you know, people I'm talking to about it, and as well as just my own common sense, it's just like, none of this adds up. None of this adds up in a way that would actually help Jack Easterby look good. And so I don't believe that there's a fire sale.
So you don't feel any better about him because he was able to trade Eli Enku for a 7th round pick?
No, I do not. I have a card on my desk. Our lawn person, we're in the suburbs, of course, so we these people market to us, right? Our lawn person quit to go back to school. And so he sold the business to his employee named Angel. So I've got a Angel's Lawn Service card, and I would install him as general manager over Jack Easterby for these next 3 days, and I think I would expect better results.
What about you, Tim? How do you feel about the Easterby coalition leading this far so that may actually not even occur?
I feel poorly. I don't think anything's going to come of it, even though there absolutely should be a way that they are aggressively shopping some of these guys. I don't think that they're going to make any big deals. And that's, I think, probably the worst part of it is that if they did make a big deal, I would be terrified, because I don't think that there's anything that we've seen since Jack Easterby arrived in Houston to make you think that he is going to maximize the value of the players that he's sending out, or even not even maximize, getting fair value. Because even though Bill O'Brien's sort of the boogeyman, Jack Easterby allegedly went along with every one of these moves. And, you know, he's a Brandon Cooks guy. He loves the, you know, he has his favorites just like Bill O'Brien did. I don't think there's any reason, even if we sit here and say they have to recoup assets. I mean, what do you know about Jack Easterby or how things have gone since he's been here that gives you a shadow of hope that he would get anything approximating fair value for anyone that he could possibly trade?
Okay, well, going off that, this question is from @AstroBull, and he asks, what do you think Houston can get for Watt, and what do you think they should get for Watt? So, Tim, are you pro-trading J.J. Watt, and how does it make you feel that if you are, that'd be Jack Easterby trying to negotiate moving the, you know, greatest player in franchise history for, you know, maybe a third-round pick potentially?
I will answer the second part of your question first. It makes me feel bad and sad that Jack Easterby would be in charge of that. In terms of what they actually could get, you know, I don't see a world in which you could ever get a first round pick for J.J. Watt at this point in his career. I think if you could get a second, and I don't know that you could, if you could get a second, I think if you're the Texans, you have to probably do it. If you could get a third round pick for him and it was somewhere he wanted to go, I think you probably have to think real, real hard about it. Just because, you know, the guy is still a very good football player. But again, if we can kind of get past the fact that this year is a lost year, and you're probably, maybe next year you're a playoff team, but I don't think that you can look at the current composition of the roster and think that next year you're a real contender. You're probably at least 2 years away from being, hopefully, a true contender if everything goes right, because you have a franchise quarterback. If you can get a third round pick for J.J. Watt and it's somewhere he wants to go right now, I think you have to think really, really hard about it. If it's a second round pick, I think it's almost necessary that you pull the trigger based on where you are, where you're going. And frankly, you know, to some degree, you know, there's not a whole lot of guys I get sort of nostalgic about. But if J.J. Watt has a chance after all he's done for your team, and granted, you've paid him tens of millions of dollars to do it, but if you have a chance to put guy in a situation where he can go win, I would love to be in a position where in January or February, I have a reason to root for a playoff team, because it ain't going to be the Texans this year. And if J.J. Watt was somehow a Packer or a Steeler or even a Bear, or I mean, anyone that was a contender or had a legitimate shot, I think it would be awesome to be able to root for him to succeed in a way that he's not going to with Houston this year, in all likelihood next year. And, you know, by, when we're talking about 2022, whether he's even a shadow of what he's been now, I think that's very much up in the air. So to answer your question, I feel terrible about Jack Easterby being in charge. But if you can get a second round pick for JJ Watt, I think you probably make a trade.
Yeah, I feel the same way about it too. Like, if you can get a two, you have to do it. I think if you can get a three, I think you probably should. Because Watt has been Watt this year, and he has a high draft, he has a high cap hit the following year. And you probably have to restructure that deal too. He's gonna be 32. And you know, Houston may not, it's a team that needs more than a head coach, you know, going into next year. So I do think if you can get either one of those picks, it's something that you have to really consider. What about you, Rivers? What do you think about the Watt maybe possibly being moved at the deadline?
The conversation's irrelevant because he doesn't want to go anywhere. I agree in theory that it makes logical sense for the Texans to look into trading him and acquire a second round pick, a late second, I think is probably the best you can get. But it's a conversation that really just doesn't matter because it's not happening. That's not the way that this team has decided to operate.
Gotcha.
Rivers, you really don't think that JJ Watt wants to go anywhere?
I think if he wanted to go somewhere, he'd be gone already.
Okay. When would they have done that?
I think after the trying to remember which game had the hissiest fit of a press conference. Probably the Packers game. That was a pretty big hissy fit.
Probably his biggest hissy fit was the one, and I don't even want to call it a hissy fit because I don't think that's fair. He's probably a fraction as frustrated as we are sitting at home, you know, throwing things at our television in terms of at least public disclosure. But the game before they fired O'Brien, I thought Watt was a different tone than we'd seen. I wonder how much of it is him looking at it going, man, there aren't a whole lot of guys like Deshaun Watson. You know, things could turn around relatively quickly. That said, I think if you told J.J. Watt, you can go play with your brothers in Pittsburgh or you can go to Green Bay, I can't imagine he wouldn't sign up for that.
I would say that that's closer than other situations, but because of the cap math, it makes it really difficult to actually pull off.
Yep.
And then also there's the fact that, as you said, I think J.J. does understand that, you know, the 2-14 season came and went, and you know, next year the Texans were 9-7. So I think there's a quick bounce back. You look at the window you're signing up with Deshaun Watson compared to, I don't know, going to like Chicago with Nick Foles. Like, why would I want to do that?
do either of you guys think that this is a team that next year is, let's say, 9 wins or better?
I would say there's a chance, for sure. I mean, it really depends on what kind of coaching staff, what kind of general manager are brought in. But sure, I mean, I think the offense, what's the best way to put this? I think the offense in competent hands can be a top 10 offense pretty easy and has upside for more.
And the defense?
Exists.
Weston, what do you think? Do you think it's that quick of a turnaround next year?
I think it can be. I think it's just because Watson, you know, if he's a top 5 quarterback, yep, there's enough talent. Like, the offensive line can be passable enough, and you know, they're gonna have to, you know, move some things around their skill players because of the cap. But they can get, like, you know, 3 good receivers, and just by like running like a more postmodern offense, they should be able to score 30 points a game fairly easily. And it's not like this division's really great, and they're going to play a last-place schedule next year too, and that will help out as well. And then
They will not play a last-place schedule,
they always beat the Jaguars. I forget about
the
that.
The Jaguars still exist.
They always have to beat the Jaguars too.
Gardner Minshew is going to be inactive next week. So they have. We're going to get to see Mike Glennon next week. So I don't think there's any doubt that their best – or not best case. The realistic scenario is they finish 3rd in the division because the Jaguars are actively trying to not win football games.
Yeah, I forgot about that. And Houston can't lose the Jaguars. Doesn't matter how bad they are. They can always beat the Jags at least. But yeah, I think the schedule will be a little bit easier than next year too because of that. And Watson can win enough close games even though they're 0-3 this year too. So I think it's possible, but I think they're not. It's not going to be like next year they should be like a 12-4 dominant team or something like that. I think next year will kind of be like how this year is expected to be, where like it's going to be a dogfight to be the number 7 seed, but they have the chance because of how good Watson is.
Okay. So
if they get rid of David Johnson and replace him with anybody competent,
Frank Gore,
literally anybody competent, this offense would have put up 500 total yards in like each of the last 4 weeks.
Jonathan Wells.
Bring
Jonathan Wells.
Tony Hollings.
Samkin Godot.
Sam Conn.
Vernon Morency. Any of those guys are more attractive to you than David Johnson?
Absolutely.
And Justin Forsett with Thanksgiving coming up too.
Oh, Justin Forsett was a special back. And they're playing the Lions too on Thanksgiving. Uh-huh. Even better. It's kismet.
So I guess since you mentioned the defense existing, Rivers, how many defensive players does Houston have on the roster that you think are legitimate NFL starters, you know, this year / going into next year?
Okay. Roby Cunningham. Watt. Yeah.
Reed.
I guess we say Reed, yeah.
You can say Reed. He's been disappointing, but he's still been very, very good for 2 years before this. But that said, I think we're all out of names.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have McKinney here, but I think he's going to get released next year. I think he was, like, you know, competent enough to start somewhere as far as a run stopper. Like, he would start in Detroit, you know. But
if you look at the cap, though, like, there's no way that they can really bring anything near what this year has back, unless they release David Johnson and release McKinney. Like, that's those are the two easy cuts. Then you get to the hard stuff.
Once they signed Cunningham to that extension, it meant McKinney was getting cut at the end of this year.
Mm-hmm. Rivers, what do you think about Fuller? Do you think he's a true number one wide receiver? Because he's going to be a free agent after next year, and they can franchise tag him next year. Or do you think of him as a number two? And do you think his injury history is too much of a concern to give him, like, you know, $14 million a year with a team that's set to be over the cap during next offseason?
I agree with everything you just said. He's a number one when he's healthy, and because of his injury history, he's a number two. But I think he's so talented that there's really no way to, for me personally, to move off of the fact that he's really that good, and he does make that big of a difference when he plays, and he's far and away the best receiver on this team, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a tough spot because they're going to have to, you know, maneuver on their skill players. And again, like, paying Fuller is hard to do at $14 million, but at least he's been somewhat healthy this year. But yeah, I think he's far and away the best receiver on this team too. I know, Rivers, you also mentioned kind of earlier when we spoke, whenever we did the Texans season preview, where you talked about this idea of Bill O'Brien, you know, being fired, and how, you know, beautiful that may be. But you kind of soured this idea that, you know, Houston may actually be in a worse spot if they fire O'Brien, because whoever is going to be the search firm that's going to hire some head coach next year can find Josh McDaniels or some sort of retread like that. Do you still have those same concerns now that Kyle is out there kind of sniffing around trying to find somebody to replace O'Brien?
I do, yes.
Are you, what do you think would be the worst possible option for Houston as a head coach next year? Would it just be like a Patriots retread with Josh McDaniels, or is there a far more sinister idea you have in your head?
Let me say that there was a lot of hype early on about the Bills, and Brian Daboll got a lot of that hype, a lot of the whole, he's going to carry Josh Allen. That's kind of fallen apart recently, but I don't know if his star has gone down. That one would scare me a lot.
What about you, Tim, on your end? Which head coach are you most excited for possibly coming here to coach Houston next year?
I mean, I guess probably I'd say I'm most intrigued by Eric Bieniemy, but I think Greg Roman would be a really, really interesting pick. It's probably not the popular pick right now, just from the perspective of Bieniemy having sort of the Chiefs glow on him. I agree 100% with Rivers. I didn't really understand the Brian Daboll love when he was getting it. I remember when he was – I don't know that he got fired by Alabama with Nick Saban, but it was certainly understood that Saban wasn't real happy with him. And then he I think the next job was the Bills offensive coordinator. But I think the guy that probably intrigues me the most is Bieniemy. I'd want to talk to Bieniemy, and I think then Greg Roman. I don't know which of those dudes is a better hire. you just have to have somebody that the whole scheme has to be tailored to who is going to make Deshaun Watson succeed the most, who's going to make him reach the highest possible level. The rest of it doesn't really matter to me. That's the whole thing. Who's Deshaun Watson going to succeed the most with?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm all in on an offensive guy. I don't really like the idea of signing a defensive sort of mind at all here. And I think, like, I'd be fine with Daboll. Greg Roman, the only thing that kind of concerns me with him is, like, it's everything's so run-based, especially the quarterback position. Like, I like the idea of Watson being used as a runner, but having him, you know, run the ball 12 times or so a game is kind of scary to think about. And also, his offense is kind of stagnate after a few years. You kind of seen that with Baltimore this year, and the same thing happened whenever he was in Buffalo and also whenever he was in San Francisco, too. I love Arthur Smith, and I like Joe Brady a lot also, but I kind of want them to stay where they're at for another year just for my own personal feelings, where I want to see Bridgewater and Brady together for one more year. I love Arthur Smith in Tennessee. I hope he never leaves, because them having like an 83% red zone touchdown rate is the most absurd thing in football right now to me. So I don't want to see those guys leave. But, like, again, anybody offensive wise, I think is kind of far and away the decision you have to go. And Bieniemy is number one for me, though, at the moment.
Brady and Smith are two guys you absolutely have to talk to. I think Joe Brady is exactly the kind of sort of outside the box, year too early hire that the Texans have shown absolutely no willingness to make. But Arthur Smith probably has a little bit more pull, a little bit more pub in terms of he's sort of done it before, he's doing it again. I don't know if he'd be a guy that the Texans would go after. The really interesting thing to me is I think Eric Bieniemy on some level is going to have his choice of jobs after this year, assuming the season goes how we think it will. And then it really comes down to how desirable is the Texans job? How much of a lure is it to work with Deshaun Watson without having a first and second round pick this year? We'll see who they hire as general manager. But there's a lot about the job that's attractive, I think, from a coaching standpoint, but there's a whole lot about it that you kind of go, I don't know. Is the lure of Deshaun Watson enough to cover up all these other glaring problems that we see?
I would pay $500 to have a 3-hour meetup with either Greg Roman or Arthur Smith and just watch them talk about David Johnson running in this Texans scheme.
Yeah, I would like
I too would like to participate in that powwow.
I'd be like, just Arthur Smith just showing like the five ways he runs outside zone, how he can use David Johnson in three of those, you know.
I don't even think you need to do that. I would probably just say, so, David Johnson, what do you think?
Tim, is there a general manager candidate that you like at all, or is that just kind of so far and away from, you know, like digging around through like VP of, you know, player ops to even have a name and all that interests you?
The one that I think interests me the most is probably Ed Dodds up with the Colts, who's assisting Chris Ballard, but I'll readily admit I haven't looked that hard into it. I think that's probably the guy that I would say, boy, if you could sit down and talk with him and see what he thinks, that'd be the dude that I'd say, hey, that'd be number one on my list right now.
Gotcha. What about you, Rivers?
I really don't care at all about the GM search. I don't understand why the GM search got prioritized over the head coach search in the first place, because that feels like a way to create the same situation we had with Bill O'Brien coming in to Rick Smith's domain and being like, that's an interesting theory you've got about personnel, Rick, but also screw you, I'll do what I want.
Also, Rivers, do you think that this is a desirable head coaching spot? Why do you think Bieniemy had, like, to his choice of any head coaching spot out there at all? Do you think Houston be top on his list, or do you think this is actually a team without the first and second round pick and the cap issues they have and the defensive struggles that it may be harder for Houston to get a top flight candidate than they may be willing to think about right now?
I think Houston will be fine. I don't buy into kind of a doom and gloom scenario here. I think there's enough on offense to make the job desirable. And obviously Deshaun Watson himself makes the job incredibly desirable. I think we need to kind of tunnel focus in on how a coach would think, and a coach would think, hey, there's some problems with this team. Yeah, but they're pretty easy to fix. I've got Deshaun Watson. Mm-hmm. I don't care about anything else. And yeah, not having picks is not ideal. Not having picks last year was also not ideal. Not having DeAndre Hopkins, not ideal. But I think I think a head coach is going to be able to look past that when compared to, say, the Atlanta Falcons job or the New York Jets job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. I think Houston's not going to have a problem like trying to find any talent all come here. I just think it's going to take more effort than just getting a new head coach here for this to be a good football team again. And there's a lot of holes and stuff to go along that. And if they are able to nail the head coaching job and just have like a regular modern offense next year, like they could fight for like a sort of 9-7 seed, even with all the difficulties they have ahead of them. And I know, Tim, you asked Rivers that earlier, but do you think this is a good and desirable head coaching position for whoever comes here next year?
I think it is, only because of Deshaun Watson. I think absent that, there's nothing really attractive about the job except for the fact that the organization has shown exceptional patience with its coaches basically throughout its entire existence. But you have a young franchise quarterback. Those jobs generally don't open. That's not fair to say. When they do open, it's rare. And if you believe in Deshaun Watson, and I would like to think that most objective observers do, you'd say, boy, there's not a whole lot of jobs like that that are going to be better. You can go maybe – the interesting question to me is, let's assume the Jets run the table, so to speak, and they're a winless team or close to it, and they get the first pick of the draft, and they get the chance at Trevor Lawrence. Would you rather have Trevor Lawrence in 2021, or would you rather have Deshaun Watson? And I think once you have to take the salary cap nuances mm-hmm. into account, but I think that would you rather have Trevor Lawrence on a rookie contract, or would you rather have Deshaun Watson and the Texans for the next, say, 4 or 5 years? It's an interesting conversation, but to answer your question, I think it is an attractive job purely because of Deshaun. The rest of it makes it, I think, frankly, pretty unattractive. But a young franchise quarterback is really, really hard to beat.
Yeah, I really like that. I think it's a great point. And it's funny, too, like, for about this thing with Watson and, Houston's 2020 season was that, Watson, year four of his rookie deal, like, this was the year that, and even kind of back to last year, they should be Super Bowl contenders and they should actually have a chance to get to the AFC Championship, that sort of thing. And so they actively got worse this offseason and kind of threw all that away. And so, like, this should have been the 6-1 probably should have been the inverse of it. Or this 1-6 should be the inverse of it. And I think that's kind of the most frustrating thing about this year. But at least Bill O'Brien's gone, though. So that concludes this portion of the conversation discussing the past, the present, and the future of the Houston Texans as they exit the bye week of their 2020 season. But now you may be asking yourself, wait, is that it? Is that the end of this podcast? No, it's far from the end of it. In the second half of this podcast, part two, as some may call it, Tim, Rivers, and I discuss the sickness we have, which is being a fan of the Houston Texans. In this portion of it, we discuss everything from Julian Davenport's Pro Football Focus grade to where Xavier Adibi was drafted to what compensation Houston would be willing to receive to trade Whitney Mercilus to another team. This part of the conversation should be up Tuesday morning, November 3rd. In the meantime, look out for that. I'm Matt Weston, and thank you for listening to Battle Red Radio.